This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Stylefile, where we cover everything and anything on the business of fashion. I'm Azura Rahman, and for this week's Style Makers, we have Joshua Fitton and Misha Shah, the creative director and managing director of Atelier Fitton.
I wanted to know how to make everything and anything, so that gave birth to Atelier Fitton, which is now a more refined version of my sense of fashion design, I guess.
After that, Lee Chulin and I will be going over what's made headlines in the fashion industry.
Where we are right now is we are, I think, in the midst of this minimalist stage where so much of what distinguishes one person from another is not going to be the bright showiness of what we saw in, say, the early noughties.
And finally, Emma Chong Johnson of Elle Malaysia gives the breakdown on the trend for brocade and jacquard.
A lot of excess this season, so a lot of textures, a lot of metallics. So brocade and jacquard kind of fit into that really nicely because they're very textured. It's not a print, but you get a lot of motif.
But first up though, our style makers for this week, Joshua Fitton and Misha Shah. Coming from a background in architecture, Joshua Fitton is no stranger to the practices of design and construction. With experience in the local fashion industry alongside his previous t-shirt label, Tempatan, Joshua is now venturing further into the art of creating menswear with the name of Atelier Fitton. Founded in 2014, the brand offers bespoke tailoring and provides men with fitted suits and shirts, each designed with precision and detail. It is now an established design house that works at adapting to current trends while remaining close to its English roots. Together with Managing Director Misha Shah, the brand recently closed KL Fashion Week's Ready to Wear 2016 by showcasing a collection made out of earthy colours, headscarves, tribal drapes and even a kilt, all giving a modern twist to the standard safari concept. Adeline Chung caught up with them as they let us in on their experience at KL Fashion Week and the growth of the brand.
Now, Joshua, let's start off with you. You know, you came with a background in architecture.
Yeah, I did.
And then as it is, you know, are you still an architect?
I don't think I can ever leave architecture. Mm-hmm. I'm not practicing at the moment, but yeah, I still miss it. I still do doodle. Yeah, I'm still an architect.
You're still an architect.
Yeah.
And you're also a creative director for Atelier Fitton as well,
yes,
as a whole, right?
Yes.
Now, how did you decide to venture into fashion?
This brings us back about maybe 3-4 years ago. After my master's, I came back to Malaysia. I was practicing architecture and was basically building glass boxes, housing estates where houses are just photocopied 200-300 times over, boring stuff, mundane stuff. So I didn't have like a creative outlet. So I decided to come up with a t-shirt line that I could explore graphics, and it just started as a side hobby.
So you started off as like designing t-shirts?
Yeah, and so I started making t-shirts, graphics.
You were selling online or...?
No, I was selling it basically fairs and these pop-up
stores
market kind of type of places and stuff. Yeah, so that brand was called Tempatan. Yeah.
But you had no fashion background ever before in terms of like, you know, you've not taken any classes, or maybe most designers are usually from, you know, fashion background like Raffles and all, but you had no fashion passion.
No, I had no prior training in fashion. Mm-hmm. I have a passion for anything creative, anything that needs designing, I'd love to be able to design it. So that was how it started.
And you, Misha, I mean, as the managing director for this brand, I mean, what are your roles in this business?
Well, I handle basically all the business side. So I do the marketing, anything to do with social media, anything to do with the web.
All the boring bits that I don't like to do.
That's why she's
hired.
Accounts.
Yeah, I deal with all that. But it's really interesting for me now because I actually studied fashion merchandising in RMIT in Australia. So when I came back, I actually started teaching and I went to a different industry. I was teaching math. I even opened up a tuition center, started teaching kids.
Wow.
Yeah, talk about doing things that we didn't train in.
Yeah. So I went into a totally different industry. I still do teach. I still do send teachers out. But then I joined Atelier Fitton as well because I still miss fashion. Like my passion is still there and mm-hmm. I enjoy it like crazy.
For the brand itself, it's obvious enough, you know, it said that, you know, English roots is the main thing of all your designs and everything.
Yeah.
And it's mainly for men who is informed by the past, but, you know, inspired by the present. Now, how did you decide on this concept for the brand? Why?
Earlier, we were talking about how I got into fashion through a T-shirt label called Tepatan. We got invited to do Fashion Week 3 years ago. I decided that I can't just show T-shirts. So we came up with Tepatan Black, which is an upscale version of this streetwear brand that is to do with like local stuff and everything. That hype just kind of died down and my interest in fashion peaked. And I wanted to know how to make everything and anything. So I explored shirt making, suit making, everything. So that gave birth to Atelier Fitton, which is now a more refined version of my sense of fashion design, I guess.
And in terms of the concept and, you know, in terms of the styling of the brand, you know, is it all decided by you, Joshua, or maybe together with Misha or maybe the whole entire team?
I do designs. Like for Fashion Week to do 20 looks, I maybe design 60 looks and we'll filter it out together. We have a back and forth. Like, mm-hmm. hey, maybe this works, this doesn't work. So it is...
We'll also get the whole team involved.
So how big is your team?
We normally have one or two interns. One or two interns and plus us. But for production, we have cutters, mm-hmm. seamsters and everybody. When it comes to running the company and designing and everything, it's just mainly us.
Just, what about sketching and all by you?
Just me, yes.
It's also mentioned, you know, on the brand's website that there's a lot of thought put into the creation of every piece. Now, from the cut, you know, to the use of materials, you know, and also the practice of responsible production as well. So tell us a bit more.
Practice of responsible production, I'm very against the idea of a big company that can just exploit workers. So I know my workers, I know who sews my sleeves on, I know who cuts my trousers and everything, and I make sure that they are paid a decent wage and everything's made in KL at the moment. If it does come to a point where we need to make stuff overseas, I will make sure that that is looked after. Yeah.
But when in terms of like fabrics and all, I mean, are they all imported from overseas or is it locally sourced?
At the moment, for Atelier Fitton, everything is imported, mainly Italian wools. This is because it's the same thing with the first ever brand, Tepatan, making stuff relevant to the climate, to the people and everything. So in terms of suits, I decided to do that in... the choice of fabrics, making it breathable.
Yeah, I was about to ask because Malaysia is such a humid, hot country. I mean, for men to actually wear suits every day, you got to be very careful on what kind of materials you're looking for and all.
Yes, yeah. So in terms of lining choice, mm-hmm. the actual fabric choice, the construction, how many vents you have, and it does need to be thought out a bit more than you would if you were in Europe or mm-hmm. somewhere, you'd probably want the opposite there.
So what kind of fabrics do you use?
Mainly wool. Some cashmere wool, some silk mm-hmm. wool blends, but mainly wool. For the suits and trousers and mm-hmm. shirts, mainly pure cotton and linens, because linen works really well here.
Which would be your favourite?
Cotton.
Cotton, yeah. We all love cotton.
Yeah.
It's not so hot, right? When it comes to sketching, you need inspiration to design a suit or shirt or anything, you know. So what inspires you in terms of like coming up with a design?
I find inspiration in anything and everything, actually. For instance, this last collection that we showed for KL Fashion Week, that mm-hmm. is inspired by my family holidays we've had in and around Africa. Basically, the whole concept of exploration.
That's when you have safari feel to it and all, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was the reason for the colour palette, the craziness and everything.
Earthy colours and all.
Mm-hmm.
So for that collection itself, because of travelling and all, but what about on a daily basis, you know, when it comes to like designing? Or because a lot of designers, they would look at other brands, you know, like Prada, Balenciaga or other international brands to get inspiration to design something. So do you follow or do you have your own principle and your own design?
We do have our own language, which is very traditional English tailoring. But at the same time, we do monitor what other brands do, especially the brands in Europe and America. That is purely to foresee trends, to foresee colour palettes, what is being used. What we thought was cool has gone out of season. So we need to constantly monitor that. And sometimes we just go totally against it, just because we feel like it. But in terms of design, maybe I'll follow it as much as how boxy things are, like silhouettes and stuff. But besides that, we just do whatever we want to do.
With such humid, hot weather we have right mm-hmm. now, how would you wear a suit? Okay, let's talk about Davis.
Linen suit, I think.
Yeah, linen would be good.
Yeah.
But linen's not really flattering on me. I love linen as a fabric, but I'll probably wear a linen shirt, but I'll still wear wool.
Wool? Isn't it hot?
It's actually breathable, and any natural material like cotton, wool, any natural fabrics is actually more breathable than a polyester blend.
Yeah,
for the sake of breathableness of a fabric, I'll choose wool and a double vent English tapered waist. I used to go in for really bum-hugging trousers, but but I've recently introduced pleats into trousers, so it's a bit more airy and more room for movement and everything. So that's current look
I'd go for.
A bit more clean cut, sharper, black and white, not too much colours. Yeah, so blues and beiges during the day and blacks and whites at night.
And a lot of people have been matching jeans with your jacket and then wearing a t-shirt inside. You know, what do you think about that?
Very American.
I see you don't like it.
I don't fully dislike it. I do try pull it off sometimes.
Why don't you like it?
Don't know. It's neither here nor there. It's not casual nor formal. It's decide, are you going to be casual or formal?
Just make up your mind.
Yes, exactly.
Now, Telefitten, you know, has been around for 2 years now.
Yeah, about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's the reception like?
So far, so good. We've got dry months. We've got very, very good months.
I think after Fashion Week as well, our followers have been going up.
Which is a good thing. Yeah.
And also, you know, celebrities wearing it helps a lot.
Yeah,
boosting on social media, Instagram, now. Social media networks gets our name up. And also because we closed Fashion Week this year. That has actually...
Yeah, people take us a lot more seriously.
Yeah. And even this year, it was crazy because this year we actually had a campaign video on.
Oh, we had a campaign shoot and video.
Yeah, in the video, we had a tent. Josh was actually like sewing the tent at like 5 o'clock in the morning and we were just like 10 kilos of...
Tent was about 18 kilos.
18 kilos of fabric. And he's just sewing it in the middle of the night and I'm like, oh my God, do we really have to sew this tent together? And he's like, nope, I want it to look perfect. He's the type who has to do everything on his own. So I'm like, okay, fine, do it. But the campaign shoot was really good. Everybody loved our video.
What was the campaign shoot about?
It was basically about this guy who goes on a safari camp on his own. So it was amazing in that we got a lot of sponsors on board. We had Jeep who loaned us a Wrangler, which was amazing. And it goes really well with the concept of the collection that we wanted to do.
Right.
We had Aldo on board for shoes and bags and accessories and stuff. And we even had a furniture company.
Modern Primitive.
Wow. To do all the safari-esque campaign-looking furniture that you see in like photo shoots based in Africa. So we tried to recreate that, but in Malaysia.
A lot of work has been put in.
Yeah, but everybody on the team did a really good job. Our model was amazing.
Yeah.
Photographer,
the wardrobe
video
team,
people,
makeup
wardrobe
team, everything.
They're really good.
Yeah, it was great for me seeing such a big team on this year's like photo shoot. And we had so much help prepping for this year's collection because we knew it was a make or break collection for closing Fashion Week. From last year, I had myself, a model, and the photographer for my shoot. There was 3 people on my shoot last year. And this year, there was about 15 of us. We had walkie-talkies. We had drones going up. We had the video, 2-3 video guys. We had the main photographer. So it was hectic, but I could finally see like the brand is growing. Like we have a lot more
manpower.
So yeah, it was a proud moment for me.
Proud moment. And your brand itself is mainly for men, but you had female models showcasing your suits as well.
Yeah. We are basically a menswear label, but
the women on the runway were wearing men's stuff.
Yes. So it wasn't made for them. It was actually made for a guy.
For a guy.
And we just plonked it on a girl and see if it looks good. And any girl wearing guys' stuff.
It does.
Stuff
it does look good.
Amazing.
It does
so
look good.
We don't see why we should go into women's wear yet.
Yeah, and the women can actually wear men's stuff. And like wearing big stuff is so in now, right?
So yeah, as a result of that, actually, we started making shirts that are like extra long. So we've started making like a shirt that looks as a dress, I guess. So,
what about the pricing of your suit and your shirts as well and your pants and all?
Our shirts start at 350 ringgit upwards, depending on fabric. And at the moment, everything's bespoke.
Okay.
But we probably will soon be online.
When would that be?
I don't know. That's a question for her. Sure? The business side of things.
We're not too sure yet, so we can't really release the actual date. But you guys will definitely know when it's out. It'll be like on our Instagram and our website. we actually really sell stuff on our website. So we have handkerchiefs.
Yeah. We do handkerchiefs, pocket squares.
Yeah, so you have ties as well?
Yeah, we do ties as well.
So that's doing quite well.
So for someone who wants to make a suit, what do they have to do?
Give us a call, get in touch with us, email, WhatsApp, or there's a section on the website where you can just fill up a form and we'll get in touch with you. So we operate a concierge service where we'll bring all the fabrics to you. We'll have a sit down as discussion on...
To their home or...
Yeah, home, office, hotel, wherever you want. So we'll sit, discuss what you're going to be wearing it for, what's the occasion, if it's a daily thing for work or if it's a tuxedo for a wedding. I'll suggest some fabrics based on what they're going to wear it for, and then we'll work down to the details after that.
Once you've met the client, and how long does it take for it to be ready?
Generally, for the first fitting, 1 week to 10 days. If everything's fine, we'll just finish it straight. That would take another 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So on average, about 3 weeks for total completion. But we can make things faster. If you need something in a week, we can do it. We never say no to anything. And I love the challenge. Yeah. I've done a suit in 4 days.
That's his department. Like all the design stuff, headaches with production, I'll be like, no, that's your headache.
Yeah.
Are there any other upcoming projects that you'll be working on with?
We're in talks
with like an online company. It's called TBS. It's called the Boutique Society. So what they do is they introduce designers from all around the world. And we're actually going to be on, I think they're launching next month.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be interesting.
Like,
what about expansion plans? So do you have a standalone shop right now?
Not at the moment.
Not at the moment. We feel like we operate a concierge service much better than just sitting and waiting for people to come in the front door. But we do realize...
And we make it a lot easier for them as well because everybody's busy now.
Yeah, you know, and we do realize we do need a shop soon. A boutique, a studio kind of thing. So it is
that's in the plans for like next year.
All next year, 2017.
Yeah, 2017.
So we look forward to it. Yeah. Look forward to it. So working on it right now. What about, you know, Christmas is around the corner as well. Anything special?
We do Christmas pocket squares.
Yeah.
So that'll be
a good gift to give out for presents people want to buy. And we also wrap it like nicely with red ribbons. And
comes in a fancy box
and everything.
But in terms of accessories and all, when do you plan to start selling like, you know, cufflinks or shoes, bags?
I don't think we'll go into cufflinks and tie pins and all that. We'll probably go as far as ties, pocket squares, maybe shoes in a few years' time. No, not now. I'd love to be able to design shoes, but...
We can collaborate with local shoe designer.
That's true.
Maybe, yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Coming up next, we have Lee Chulin and I going over the latest news in the fashion industry. Before that though, here's Haim with Forever, and this was played at Charlotte Ronson's Spring-Summer 2016 collection in New York. It's Stylefile on BFM 89.9, bringing fashion to you over the airwaves. I'm Azura Rahman, and it's time for Style Scoop with Lee Chulin. For our first story for this week, the fashion labels that hire prisoners. From Mexican tattooed bags to embroidery sold to Stella McCartney, social enterprises are working with prisons. Now, this came out on The Guardian, but of course. But it's one of those stories that kind of fills your heart, doesn't it, Lynn? Just to give a quick breakdown, this article basically highlighted on how in certain parts of the world, in Mexico and in the UK, for example, they have specific companies called prison art or fine cell work. Quite straightforward there. But basically, for prison art in Mexico, for example, they create bags, wallets and other accessories in shops around Mexico and internationally online with designs inspired by tattoos, an art form that the social enterprise founders became familiar with during his time in a Guadalajara prison. And fine cell work in the UK, their work has been exhibited at the V&A, no less, and also sold to designers such as Stella McCartney and hotelier Kit Camp. And basically, they do a lot of embroidery. And the idea is basically to employ prisoners who are under a rehabilitation program, I suppose, to give them a willful and gainful employment by producing these items, which are sold slightly below market price, but it is a form of social enterprise. Is it a win-win situation? You seem slightly skeptical, Bolin.
No, I don't. It might just be my face. I actually think that it's great. I thought that the emphasis on the company's part of ensuring that the prisoners aren't being exploited, that was key to me to be able to read the story and think, yeah, this is what should happen. Also because, I mean, we have had our issues with the textile industry in the past and with the clothes making industry. I mean, we've talked about that with, you know, fast fashion, sweatshops, essentially. And prisons are obviously ripe for sweatshops. You have adult people, you know, who want to earn some money, who want to support their families, who have nothing else to do. But in this case, what we're seeing is people getting involved in creating pieces that actually have meaning and beauty, as opposed to, you know, just kind of sewing labels onto T-shirts, for instance.
It's a transferable skill in that sense, you think?
I think so. And I think that they are respecting how most of us, and by us I mean people who have not been incarcerated, people who are not in prison, in some ways it reflects the way we work as well. The flexi hours they were talking about, being able to work from home so that, you know, one prisoner in particular or one former inmate in particular could concentrate on caring for his daughter or his mother. And those are the considerations that we give to anybody you would want working for your organisation.
I imagine not all prisoners are given the luxury of participating in such programmes. I imagine that they're not high danger prisoners, I suppose, in the sense that, you know, they're probably those who have committed low offences, I imagine, or those on a rehabilitation programme. And hence, this, you know, it's almost like a reward, I suppose, an incentive to be on your best behaviour. The thing is, though, Lynn, I think it's not something without controversy because, yes, of course, the main concern is, you know, whether this form of labour, essentially, is being exploited in terms of how much they're being paid. Now, Whole Foods, for example, that big famous chain of organic supermarkets all over the UK and also the US, and also they deal a lot of fair trade suppliers, they've announced in April they would stop stocking products made by prison labour after customers accuse the supermarket chain of participating in the exploitation of low-paid prisoners. And I think it's pay. At the end of the day, whether it comes to, you know, prisoners making clothes or sweatshops in Bangladesh making clothes, is what differentiates between whether it is a fair job or not, and whether you should feel conscionable about using these clothes made by this prisoners or not, is the pay, right?
Agreed. And it's pay in situations where people are not in a position to ask for more. I think that is the key, because it's one thing to pay somebody, you know, low wages. It's another thing to pay someone low wages who can never possibly ask for more because they will never be in that position. But I did think that reading at least this article and the people interviewed in it, there is a consciousness on their part of the importance of not exploiting. Now, whether that's just lip service, I don't know. I would hope not. And I think that it's nice that you could view these in some ways as sort of pilot projects, right?
Right.
These are people doing things that could potentially be replicated by other people in different parts of the industry.
As an ethical purchaser, which I think that you are, Lynn.
I liked it.
Right?
Fingers crossed.
An informed purchaser at the very least. How do you feel about purchasing clothes that has components made by prisoners?
I'm okay with it, provided that, firstly, that there is fair recompense. You know, what that fair is, I guess, differs from country to country. But the fact that it does hire people who need hiring, I don't see anything wrong with that. And looking at the items that they had, again, within this news piece, within this article, I would buy those shoes.
Right.
You know, I...
Right.
Might not buy the...
You wouldn't buy them because they're made by underprivileged people, but it's more of the sense whether it looks good or not, that would be your first concern.
Exactly. You know, they're not pushing it the way Toms are pushing, you know, buy a pair of shoes and a pair of shoes goes to a child in need.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like that. It's just that this is our business model. It works. And here are a beautiful pair of shoes. Do you want them?
I'll take a few steps back and move on to our next story. Gender-bending fashion goes mainstream. This is an article on fastcompany.com, and it highlighted how several new companies are building their businesses around the mainstreaming of androgynous clothing, which is no longer a passing fad. And that's probably due to do with legislation being passed in America for, you know, same-sex couples. But in 2016, fashion androgyny, is it more than just a passing fad, or is it really serving a need in the market? So they gave some examples, including Older Brother, a brand founded in 2013 by Bobby Bonaparte and Max Kingery. Their collection consists of unisex garments that are designed to hang loosely on one's frame, disguising male and female body parts. Locally speaking, Anna Abu, a local designer, has done the same with Him and Her by Anna Abu, which was launched earlier this year. And they continue with their minimalist and androgynous approach in their clothing, in their main collection as well. Now, I think it's great business-wise, Lynn, in the sense that, you know, you're streamlining inventory, you have something for men and women without having to worry about the amount of inventory that you have. But my question is, if everyone is dressing like everyone else, whether you're a boy or a girl, what does it mean for creativity then? If it just means that everyone's going to dress like the boyfriends, if everyone's boyfriend's going to dress like the girlfriends, are we just wearing uniforms at the end of the day?
Maybe a little bit. I think it's going to come down to detailing. And that's true of a lot of fashion these days. I think where we are right now is we are, I think, in the midst of this minimalist stage where so much of what distinguishes one person from another is not going to be the bright showiness of what we saw in, say, the early noughties, you know, where everything is big earrings, everything is spangly.
Everything is bling bling. That was when it was created, right? That phrase.
Pretty much. Thank you, J-Lo. But that was the point where we were. And where we are now, I really do think it's come down to detailing. We might all be wearing the same boyfriend jeans, but what kind of fray do you have on yours? Right. You know, what kind of wash is going on? And that kind of small little things kind of tip you over one way or the next. And so I actually read it and I thought it was a great idea. But my key thing is, will men want to dress like women?
Exactly. The bias is always towards the male, in the sense that, you know, you're expected to wear your boyfriend's jeans or your boyfriend's sweatshirt and so on and so forth. But I've yet to see, I don't know, a straight man wearing their girlfriend's skirt or, you know, their dress without, you know, looking androgynous clearly. And I think we could do a bit more with that, don't you think? I think there's room for that.
I do. There's also a huge emphasis within the article on the designers designing for queer people. And I think that's fantastic. But I also think that in order for it to be a widespread thing, straight men and straight women, for example, would need to be able to do that without necessarily appearing queer if they don't want to,
right.
For example. Mm-hmm. You know, I think for it to be truly a change of mindset, a trend that is not a trend that has arrived and stays, I think that there is this element of, well, can everybody do it? Or is it always going to be the domain of the people who would have identified as androgynous anyway?
Right. It's interesting to see how these ideas develop, though. And I think it's a turning point for many people, especially for those from an earlier generation. And maybe it'll come to a point where this generation or the younger generation will just take this as a given. And it'll be interesting to see how androgyny will evolve with time as well, whether it really means that, you know, it's okay for blokes to wear skirts as well.
Would you date or walk around with a man wearing a skirt?
It's a strong look. I'm not keen on men with strong looks, just because it's my preference, nothing to do with that. But, you know, I'm not into peacocks.
That's fair. I agree with you, but I think it's just because I'm not ready. And
maybe
I can
we
admit
haven't
that.
Evolved, Lynn. We haven't
so.
Evolved.
I think
right?
we are not there yet.
Okay.
But speaking as a woman, dressing androgynous is good for me.
Right.
But I think that it needs to do that crossover in order for it to really land.
Okay, so it's kind of a tricky issue. Talking about tricky issues, though, Marc Jacobs, basically he triggers more criticism after defending dreadlocks at his New York fashion show. Now, basically, Marc Jacobs has been accused of cultural appropriation, sparked a social media backlash after defending his decision to cast predominantly white models to wear dreadlocks in his New York fashion show. The criticism was heightened by his reply, which stated that he did not see colour or race and just people instead. Wrong thing to say, Marc Jacobs. But first things first, did you feel uncomfortable when you first saw images coming up from the internet of these white girls with colourful dreadlocks? Or mind you, they were in shades of purple, blue, pink, think rainbow bright dreadlocks, basically, on the runway, on white models. Did you feel uncomfortable about that? Did you think this was going to spark a backlash?
I didn't necessarily feel hugely uncomfortable, but I think that's partly because that's the nature of cultural appropriation, right? We don't necessarily see when other cultures are being appropriated.
It's
when
your
own.
Yes.
I mean, I get where the criticism is coming from. I really think that the huge problem, as you so rightly pointed out, is his response.
Yeah.
What was that response?
You know, I mean, just mea culpa all the way, you know, Marc Jacobs. I think it would have been much more helpful if he had actually been a bit clearer about the actual inspiration for this. I think it's been cited by some people that these are the looks of cyberpunks, of ravers back in the 90s.
And it showed such a breathtaking amount of ignorance, arrogance, and privilege all at once.
Yes.
And it ignores so much, because the thing is, you can't deny the association of dreadlocks, where they come from.
Mm.
And it's been also pointed out that black women and their hair in America, it's a huge deal.
It's
you
a
know?
Huge deal.
A black
Songs
woman,
have been written about it. India RE, right?
This is the thing. And so for me, it was his reaction. It was not so much what was put out, because honestly, people put out genius / stupid borderline shows all the time, you know,
yeah.
the kinds of things that walk the runway, really, they all kind of tread that, is this amazing? Mm-hmm. Is this terrible? Line all the time.
Right. I think he just reinforced that supposed racism when he defended his decision to do so.
And he doubled down after too. He just didn't stop.
I know. Did you like it though? Apart from all the, you know, criticism of cultural appropriation, of racism, would you be wearing dreadlocks in your hair in shades of rainbow pastels?
No part of that is what I would do. But the other thing was, I thought it neither enhanced nor detracted from the collection. And that was the big thing for me, because the collection was interesting. I mean, it's very classic Marc Jacobs. You know,
But it won't be remembered for that now.
It won't. And I don't remember looking at it and thinking, ooh, those dreadlocks, you know, interesting. As opposed to the beauty looks at, for example, Proenza Schouler with the painted ears. And see, that I remember. And that had impact. What is this? Why are you getting in trouble over something that isn't worth getting in trouble over?
And Marc Jacobs, being a New Yorker, you know, being an American, you should be well versed with issues like this. You know, it's just, these are discussions that are being done on a daily basis in America. You know, it's a mainstream discussion. It all just sounded really tone deaf on his part. So.
It did. It was just so arrogant. And this is coming from somebody who expected better, I think, from somebody who should be embracing diversity in fashion. It's awful.
Shame on you, Marc Jacobs,
You
know. Just for your punishment, send us a pair of shoes. Thank you very much.
A bag.
After the break, Emma Chong Johnston, managing editor of Elle Malaysia, gets all fancy with fancy fabrics, namely brocade and jacquard. It's Azura Rahman on Style File. Next up, Emma Chong Johnston of Elle Malaysia gets under the skin for the fabrics of autumn, brocade and jacquard. The fashion season, autumn, is upon us. And brocade is on your mind, Emma.
Yes, it is. So autumn, winter is shaping up to be a really kind of a lot of excess this season. So a lot of colours, a lot of textures, a lot of metallics, and it's very kind of maximal. A lot going on. So brocade and jacquard kind of fit into that really nicely because they're very textured. It's not a print, but you get a lot of motif and pattern in a fabric.
It's a very rich fabric though, because you're thinking about gold inserts, you know, it's raised, it's uneven in some cases, and it's just a very occasion-like fabric in
that
sense, right?
Yeah.
So how would you, you know, not end up looking like the Christmas tree when you're wearing something like this? How would you use brocade for autumn 2016?
I mean, like traditionally you would have, like the brocade coats, but also we've seen it a lot in accessories, so a lot of brocade bags, brocade shoes, and also just separate, so shirts, skirts, shorts.
So it's almost like injecting a touch of richness to your everyday outfit in that sense. And what kind of colour combinations are we looking at that will be appropriate for this season?
This year it's definitely all about the gold. And so anything that kind of ties with that. So a lot of kind of like mustard shades, and then your traditional brocade colours, which are purples and the kind of jewel tones like emerald green, things like that.
Right, very much a rich colour palette in that sense, very jewel tones in that sense then. Mm-hmm. How would you style a brocade item? And have you got any particular one on your eyes at the moment?
I haven't actually seen anything specific yet, but I know it's one of those things that you know that the high street is going to do because brocade is quite easily available now. I think I would really like a pair of brocade shoes. I think like brocade pumps or like Mary Jane brocade would be really nice, like a nice kind of extra element to an outfit.
So think small pieces as opposed to a head-to-toe kind of look then.
Also because it's quite hot, because it's a heavy fabric.
Would you do a coordinate though, like a brocade suit?
Yes, I think that would be really cute. Like for Christmas, I think a brocade suit would be really nice.
A touch Austin Powers perhaps?
A little bit, but you know
shagadelic.
Just keep it very kind of slimline, you know, either really like some chunky flat heels or a nice kind of minimal stiletto.
Would you restrict it to the evening only though?
As with a lot of things these days, it is traditionally an evening fabric, but it looks cooler if you try and wear it in the daytime. So again, pairing it with like all your staples, so your denim, your white shirts, your grey t-shirts, things like that, just to kind of make it a bit more casual, make it a bit more cool, a bit more laid back.
So making it much more functional, day-to-day kind of thing in a sense. It is an expensive fabric though, Emma.
It is,
right?
Yes.
So I mean, would you go high street with this in that sense then? Would it be a lasting trend?
I think you can quite easily go high street with it because I think there's going to be loads of really good variations. But obviously, like a brocade suit, for instance, is maybe not something you want to spend thousands and thousands on. But if you find one and you look amazing in it, then, you know,
By all means.
Yeah.
And that was this week's episode of Style File. If you've missed any parts of the show, catch up with our podcast on www.bfm.my/stylefile. And don't forget to like our Facebook page, Style File on BFM 89.9. Before we go, though, we leave you with Totally Enormous Extinct Dinosaurs with Trouble. And this was played at TB's Spring Summer 2016 collection in New York. This has been Style File with Azura Rahman on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.